step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin. Theodore, breathe in, breathe out, me and more, breathe in, breathe out, never mind, it was time, number nine, let my lies be mine,
at the death wish. The entire station's going to be out here till 6 p.m. I'm looking straight through the window into downtown, which is part of the appeal here. You got great views into the city while you're playing golf. Of course, you play golf, you could do the pickleball thing as well. And, if you just want to get on a driving range, you can do that too. So it's all out here for you at East River 9. We're going to be out here till 6, as I said. And then you have the River House where you come in, get a drink, watch the Open or the Open Championship or the British Open. They got a problem with branding for me. I don't remember the name of that thing. I think it's just called the Open right now. But it's going on, and that's why we're out here. Anytime there's a major championship, you can expect us out at East River 9. And it's a great time. And when you come in from your round, come into the bar area, have a drink, get some good food, and also watch what's ever on the TV. So come out here and join us and enjoy it. And speaking of us, we do have our promo table out here, and you know what that's about. Normally, you can register for the Summer Circuit, but this is a regular event. So Summer Circuit stuff, not today. You should have met the guys out at McCormick & Schmick at the town and country location for that. So that will continue throughout the summer as well. But for today, it's us getting ready to welcome the Astros back as they head to Seattle. And we talked about the rotation yesterday for the Seattle series. It does not involve Hunter Brown. You'll have Brandon Walter, Lance McCullers, and Fromber. And what I don't like is a site, I think it's a Sports Illustrated site covering the Mariners acknowledging no Hunter Brown and saying the Mariners caught a break, a big break even, is I think how it was put. Everyone's aware of how good Hunter Brown is, despite the last couple starts, and not having him in the rotation for this series feels like a win, at least from the Mariners' perspective. The Mariners have been hanging around throughout. They got the benefit of a poor Astros run in the last week, or at least the last week that there was baseball, not with the All-Star game. So they've looked at this series as a way to really get back in it. And it's only a big series if it goes poorly for the Astros. Like, if they take 2 out of 3 and are out 6 games up, okay, that's like what this whole season has been, right around 6 or 7 games up in the West. If the Mariners take a game, fine. Or excuse me, take 2 out of 3, fine. It's not the best outcome, but hey, you drop another game on your lead. But if they sweep, which is the disaster outcome, then it's a big series. The result, I think, means will determine how big of a series is and what it means for the race the rest of the way. Because the Mariners are pointing to the series as one where they can claw back in, and if they go to just take 3 from the Astros, then we have a race. Now we're talking about what moves need to be made to bolster this team, and if there's a need for real urgency. Because I don't think the Astros are very urgent about additions, because they will point to, whether it's false hope or not, that Jordan's coming back. They do expect Jeremy Pena back, certainly not for this series. I think Dana Brown, or before we even hit the All-Star break, said Jeremy Pena back for the Seattle series would be a little too soon. So I do think they have their eye on him coming back. You can take that for what it is when we talk about Astros and their diagnosis and predictions about when guys are coming back. But the Yordan one's a little more concerning. We certainly talked about it, that they're not sure that even if he does come back, he'll be at full strength. And you can fade that a little bit when when you still controlled the division. And this series will go a long way. It's if it goes really well to determining that, and certainly if it goes really poorly. So we got that going on. And you just hope you get the performances you have gotten from Brandon Walter, because he's been better than you could have ever asked for of him. Him and Colton Gordon, no ups and downs, whatever. But those guys have brought some stability to a rotation that only has really two guys in it that you believe in on a start-to-start basis, at least for me, Fromber and Hunter Brown. And we'll get Lance McCullers on Saturday, and that's the one. That's the inflection point for the season and this team, as far as are they a real threat to go win a World Series. They got to find a third starter. I don't know if it's Eric Eddie, who hasn't done any minor league rehab stuff yet, or is it Lance, or is it Christian Javier, or Luis Garcia, wherever it comes from. That needs to be solidified. And while Brown and Fromber can certainly take you pretty far, you don't want to go into any series very worried about who your third starter is. So if the Astros can find that over the course of the next few months, that's a big deal. And can Lance McCullers be one of those guys? It was talked about quite a bit this morning on the show that the road starts are the ones you love from Lance, and the home ones have been the disasters. His last road start, I believe, was what, in L.A. against the Dodgers to start that series, and he was great. So can he duplicate that on Saturday against the Mariners? So the Mariners have not announced who their Sunday starter will be. That appears to be up in the air. They will go with Luis Castillo tonight and Logan Evans on Saturday. So Castillo against Brandon Walter, Logan Evans against Lance McCullers. We'll see who they roll out there on Sunday against Fromber. Right now, TBA for that. So baseball's back. The Astros are back. And the second half is back. So with that lineup the way it is, pitching is even more paramount. And we saw the last time they're playing that while the lineup will have moments, it can't carry this team if the pitching isn't up to snuff. And you missed out on a win in a Hunter Brown start, and that's tough to deal with. And that was what led us into the All-Star break. He came back a little bit early. I think he came back on 4 days rest against the Rangers. He wanted to pitch as opposed to being available for the All-Star game, and there's a back and forth going on online about that decision. Are we playing the results of that decision, or was it the solid decision no matter what? I think Chandler Rome is going back and forth with fans about it, and some fans are saying, no, I didn't want him to pitch to begin with. I'm not playing the result. Certainly Rome's contingent was that, hey, guys, the All-Star game doesn't mean as much, certainly, as being ready, or at least being available to pitch against the Rangers. I guess the pushback would be, well, if you're bringing him back a day early, why not just have him sit? No matter what, you take an L. If you get it, we would still have a 5-game lead, and you have him ready for the Mariners series that's coming up here. But they made a decision, didn't work out, and then they've doubled up, or at least backed that decision. Backed up that decision by saying, Hunter Brown, we're going to sit you against the Mariners, and you'll be available in our next series. So that's kind of the setup for this weekend. Take 2 out of 3. Kind of silence whatever the Mariners think is going on, and kind of get yourself back on track. And we'll see how they fare coming out of the break. This is a team who was hot, and then all of a sudden was a team who was losing 5 out of 6 and almost lost 6 out of 6. They had a lead, they blew it, and then they eventually won a game in extra innings thanks to Zach Short. So Seattle, the Astros, we'll certainly talk a little bit more about that throughout the show. And later in the show at 11:30, we'll be joined by Michael Carroll, the host of Comicast. He'll tell us what you should and shouldn't watch this weekend, maybe give a review of some things he has watched. So we'll be joined by Michael in the second hour of the show. We'll come back with really what is the full cycle of the Kevin Durant experience if you're a fan. If you don't know what's going on right now, I'll let you know. But it's Durant versus Phoenix fans, and don't think Rocket fans won't be involved in this. Now, it'll be a couple years down the line, but it always turns out this way with Kevin Durant. I'll talk about that and how this came about when we come back. Wait,
It's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
So Dream Shake responds to what we're talking about in the first segment. He says he thinks the Astros are the walking wounded. I wonder how long it'll last. Yordan, in his opinion, is out for the year. And the pitching for the Astros is their only hope. He also talks about the series for Seattle and the Astros. If you feel that way, I mean, I can't push back on it. It feels like a team who has a very slim margin of error. And it gets even slimmer when you can't expect a solid performance from your pitchers because of the lack of punch in the bottom half of the lineup currently, brought about by injuries. So when you're rolling out Trammell and Short and Hummel for multiple starts a week, and when Dubon's in the lineup, it feels like a blessing because that's actually a major league hitter, and he is part of that back half of the lineup. It's tough. It's tough. You're putting a lot of pressure, particularly on the likes of Brandon Walter and Colton Gordon and even Lance McCullers, guys who are either not used to what they're being asked of or guys coming back from injury. It's tough. And you'll see two of those guys this weekend in Seattle. So you just hope to kind of tread water. Hell, if you can continue the surprising start to the year at this point and add games to your league, great. But you got to find a way to hope that you can, and you hope, got to find a way, and you hope that you win enough games until Pena makes his way back into the lineup, and then, well, the Yordan thing is the Yordan thing. Who knows? And of course, we'll see if they make an addition at the deadline to bolster this roster and that lineup. So, yeah, it is a team who is wounded, but they so far found a way to maintain. Let's see if they can continue that as we get into the second half of the season. Okay, so I mentioned the Kevin Durant thing. We found out yesterday that AJ is a Luka fan. He doesn't have a Luka Muse account, but he is a Luka fan. How do you feel about Kevin Durant as a player, AJ?
I think he's one of the greatest players of all time, arguably the greatest scorer of all time. I mean, I've always liked his game. He's always been a player that I've enjoyed. When I play basketball, I love like shoes and stuff like that. I still have a lot of KD, so yeah.
Got it. So you would classify yourself as a KD fan. Maybe not a stan, but a KD fan.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. So you, like a lot of people, before KD joins their team, loves KD. And then when they join their team, they like him even more. And then at the end of his tenure on the team, they can't stand him. And that is what's going on in Phoenix. And this was all brought about by a Bradley Beal post. Bradley Beal said goodbye to Phoenix in the most, I guess you might find it insulting.
Peace
to a Phoenix fan, because he was in a Phoenix jersey on court, and whatever reason he chucked the deuce to the camera, and that was the image he used to say goodbye. Didn't write anything. Didn't say enjoyed my time. And if you didn't enjoy your time, I guess there's no reason to lie. He just the pictures of him chucking the deuce, and then it is and then you see the deuce emoji, and that's all he wrote. And Kevin Durant, he wasn't the only NBA player to find it funny, but Kevin Durant did find it funny, and then that set off Phoenix fans, because you bring in Kevin Durant, and then you throw on Kate, then you throw on Bradley Beal, you think you're a title contender, and they were anything but title contenders with those two. They were one of the more disappointing teams in the league, and Katie, we know, known individual who will use Twitter to push back on anything he believes is incorrect, used yesterday to get after Phoenix fans, for their discontent with him. So it was, and some of these accounts are aggregating accounts or Phoenix Suns accounts where the whole brand is, hey, we're going to talk about Phoenix Suns basketball. There are some people who are just individuals themselves who got after him too. But the biggest one, I forgot what it was called. It might have been like Phoenix Suns Tracker, or either way, it was along those lines. And when Bradley Beal, or Suns Uniform Tracker, I guess someone who just posts what uniforms the Suns are wearing per every game and probably keeps count of them and lets people know. So Suns Uniform Tracker, after watching or posting the Bradley Beal Instagram post and also Kevin Durant with his smiling emoji under the post, said, "Good riddance, clowns." And that led to Kevin Durant being Kevin Durant and not taking it well. And, you know, he's just laughing. He's being the above, I'm above all this, above the clouds individual when he talks about it. He doesn't think he ruined the culture. He doesn't think he was toxic for the Suns. Doesn't really lay any blame at his feet for what happened, and that's even more infuriating to a fan base who thought he was going to be their answer. And instead, it led to the Bradley Beal acquisition, and now look at the Suns. Sure, you give you give a guy like Devin Booker the money you gave him, and you do that because you want to keep him around, but nothing has gone right for the Suns since they brought on Kevin Durant, and Suns fans are feeling it right now. And the worst thing about it is he's laughing at them about their feelings, and that's what's going to happen here. I hate to say it, but that's how it goes for Kevin Durant. You welcome him, you love him, and unless you win a title, and even when you do win a title, Warrior fans had their issues with him, and a lot of that had to do with them always wanting to acknowledge that it was Steph's team, and maybe Kevin Durant didn't appreciate that part of the equation. So I would say, why at the tail end of his career would anything be different? If you're a Rocket fan who's excited about it, I think you should be. But I wouldn't become a stan of Kevin Durant because it always flips. Now, if you win a lot, you win a title, then maybe it doesn't go that way. But eventually, it'll be you and Kevin Durant fighting. He'll be retired or maybe looking for one last deal at 40 years old someplace, and you will be fighting with Kevin Durant about how he ruined your franchise if it doesn't go well, because that's how it's gone everywhere else. I don't imagine he'll get traded. I just don't see it at this point. He has let it be known through reporting that he would like Houston to be the final stop, it seems like. He was very vocal in the trade, when the trade negotiations were happening. He was very vocal in not wanting to be anywhere, and wanting to only be in Houston, and making sure other teams couldn't make a deal, because Phoenix had an offer from Minnesota for DiVincenzo, Terrence Shannon, Rudy Gobert, and number 17. Now, I guess it all depends on how you feel about Jalen Green, but we're talking about DiVincenzo, who's been a playoff performer, who's a playoff rotation guy. You're talking about Rudy Gobert, even if he's not still Defensive Player of the Year caliber. Consistently, he's still a guy who can be a rim deterrent. And Terrence Shannon had some nice moments in the playoffs. And then you're also getting a pick from the Wolves. That feels like a better package than what the Rockets were offering. We know they apparently offered Cam Whitmore, and the Suns said, "No, we'd rather have your second round picks." So maybe they would have asked for a pick or two instead of Terrence Shannon along with the first round pick they're going to number 17 overall. But KD said, "No, I'm not going there. So don't even try it." So he made it a point to come here, and that's why it's all good now. Look, I hope it goes great. I hope everything goes smoothly. But everything suggests that at some point, the biggest Rockets accounts who love him are going to be happy that he's gone or in a fight with him afterwards. So Kevin Durant, very, very active on Twitter the last couple of days, and the brunt of his commentaries has been directed at Phoenix Suns fans. Don't become one of them, because you're never going to win against him. He will use everything in his arsenal, including, "Hey, I'm me. I'm great. I got all this money. It doesn't matter." Like, for example, he says, I'm Magneto on X, and I'm Captain America in real life." Apparently, that's in response to people saying no one likes him. He goes, "Actually, when I meet people in real life, they love me. It's just the people here who don't like me." He is he's very comfortable in that world. I would say don't join him. But hopefully Kevin Durant's time here ends in a better way than it has everywhere else, really since OKC. So that's going on right now. Your best player has got the biggest Twitter fingers in the NBA probably. I can't think of a more active person on Twitter who's an NBA star than Kevin Durant. So I imagine we're going to get some of that throughout the year during his time in Houston. And don't let him have a bad game, because I imagine we'll get quite a bit of his responses to people who are questioning his importance, because that's going on right now. Okay, we'll go to break with that. We'll get into some NFL stuff, because there have been some deals being done, even just beyond the second rounders. You also have an example of why you don't wait. If you can get a deal done, you get the deal done at the time, because now the price of the brick goes up, and that's what the Cowboys and Micah Parsons are dealing with right now. I'll tell you why when we come back.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
So TJ Watt got a big deal from the Steelers. And he got it at an older age, which had people a little surprised that he got the type of money he got. He's one of several guys to get big deals at the edge position this offseason. It's him. It's Max Crosby. Myles Garrett got his money. We all remember when Myles Garrett wanted out of Cleveland, and he was trying to. It looked like he was going to force his way out. And Phoenix said, "No, you're not. We're not trading you." And then eventually, he just got his money, and maybe that was all a ploy to get more money from the Browns. So he'll probably be. Not a Brown for life. That's too much. We just never know how these things are going to go. But he's set up to be with the Browns for a long time. So is T.J. Watt. And I brought this up because you start to look at some of the salaries for these guys. T.J. Watt is making, like, if annually, it'll be like $41 million a year. We're getting near, it's not quarterback money for a good quarterback. Those guys are getting in the 50 range, but we're getting ever closer to defensive ends being valued in a way where they're the second most valued position in all of football. Because you start to look at the non-quarterback list right now, it's T.J. Watt at $41 million, Ja'Marr Chase at 40 and a quarter, and then Myles Garrett, 40, Danielle Hunter is at 35.6 after the Texans, I believe, reworked his deal, and then Max Crosby at 35.5. So you look at it, four of the top five non-quarterback salaries go to defensive ends or edge players. And normally left tackle was one of those contracts you could put in that spot, but they are not topping out, at least they're not topping or rising above quarterbacks and the receivers right now. And that leads me to what's going on in Dallas. Now, Micah Parsons participated in a mini camp weeks ago, so there seemed to be maybe some momentum, or at least they weren't too contentious, the Cowboys and Micah Parsons, if he's showing up and at least making himself available. But this is why you don't wait. This happened to the Cowboys before. AJ, you can speak to this. When they kept making Dak wait for whatever reason, whether they didn't think they thought he was worthy of the contract or they thought it was better for their team to have him play on the franchise tag, they eventually paid him APY of $60 million now, and he's a guy where he probably falls into the, let's just say, 7 to 11 range of quarterbacks, something around there, depending on how you feel about him. But I don't think anyone thinks Dak is a top five quarterback right now. Of course, if he goes through a healthy year and plays well, that ranking of him can change. But if they would have paid Dak when it seemed most prudent early, they're not paying him the money they're paying him. He still tops out as far as contracts concerned with quarterback. He's still making the most per year, and there have been deals since. That's why if you can get a deal done, you get a deal done. Now, Micah Parsons wants, or at least he was said to want, $40 million a year APY, and now with T.J. Watt getting 41, Micah Parsons is not going to come in, at least he's not going to try to come in under T.J. Watt. He's younger. He's got, you would think, more left in the tank, and he's just as productive. So, since you are following this probably more closely than me, AJ, what do you think? Is this deal something that's just a formality? Micah Parsons is going to get done, and he's going to just become the most. He's just going to become the highest paid non quarterback in football. You think that's how it's going to work out?
Yeah, most definitely. And for me, like, I just, it annoys me when people, like, get so passionate about it. Like, oh my gosh, the Cowboys, they wait so long and stuff like that. At the end of the day, you're not getting a fraction or any percentage of their money. So the Cowboys, we just have to accept they operate differently. Jerry Jones drags the stuff out, but he ends up paying them. So, I mean, it is what it is. Micah still said he's going to training camp and all that, so that's a good thing. But, like, for me, I mean, I've said that a long time ago. They're not going to work in a conventional way. So they'll pay him when they pay him, and that's just what it is. I mean, Jerry Jones is fine with paying them the most money, so. It is what it is, man.
Yeah, it's not bad to have some acceptance of what your franchise is. No matter how you think they should work, if they're not going to work that way, you might as well just be someone who knows.
Right, they don't care what we say no way. So, I mean,
when it comes down to it, your stars are going to get paid. Like, Dak got his, CD got his, and Michael will get his. It'll just be in a way that maybe doesn't make too much fiscal sense, and maybe it hurts your roster as a whole, because if you're paying him a couple extra million, where could that have been better spent? But it is what it is, as they say, and the Cowboys do it that way. And look, Jerry loves a star, and if Michael Parsons is a star, he will get his money. It'll just cost more. And if, like you said, if Jerry Jones ain't bothered by paying it, why should anyone else? But you know, everyone, whether they have a podcast or a radio show or they're just a fan, they love being GMs. We love playing that game, and if they can find fault with how a GM does things, because, you know, in some ways everyone thinks they could do the job, at least the ones who have these conversations about it, then they'll take issue and point it out. So Michael's next. He'll be the next guy, and he probably will at some point, and I'm sure it'll be a feather in his cap and a feather in his agent's cap, to be the highest paid non-quarterback in all of football. But that current moniker belongs to T.J. Watt of the Steelers, and J.J. quote tweeted a graphic, because it showed his career earnings compared to his brother's, and I think J.J.'s career earnings come under what T.J. Watt's going to make over the course of the deal if he reaches all the guarantees, or at least if all the guarantees come through and he reaches all the bonuses. It'll put him above what his brother made, and he said, hey, don't ever ask me to pull out the wallet again. Which, funny joke, but it's him, it's JJ, and then it's Derek, right? The fullback brother who he just picked the wrong position. Maybe Derek was never going to be able to be a big time defensive end, but if you're talking about decisions, that's a poor decision to be a fullback, unless that's the only way you're gonna make it. He played fullback, I think, at Wisconsin, then he wound up in the pros for a little bit. But hey, he didn't get the genes to be an edge rusher. Or at least in JJ's case, an inside guy and an outside guy, and it wound up probably costing him $100+ million just because his brothers got the right genes for that. So the Watt brothers, not that anyone was caring about their caring or worried about their money, you just add a couple more million dollars, well, at least $100+ million to that, as T.J. Watt is your highest paid non-quarterback in football, thanks to the Steelers. And we were discussing it earlier, because there was a story about teams who finish in the last place, pretty much. And the Texans have a few, certainly not as many as some, like the Browns, but the Steelers don't have any, because they don't have losing records. And we talk about how teams do things. They don't fire coaches. And for the most part, they're going to keep their stars around, particularly if they do it in the Steeler way. And T.J. Watt is a prime example of that. So he stays. I don't think anyone really ever considered T.J. Watt being a guy who would not be a Steeler. I know there was talk anytime a contract comes up that could they trade him. Steelers were never trading T.J. Watt, and he appears to be a guy who always wanted to finish his career as a Steeler. That's still up for debate, considering how these things go, but at least for a little bit more, he'll be a Steeler, and they'll probably win their 9 games this year. We'll see if Aaron Rodgers can elevate them. As you might say, this is one of those teams who is going all in, like the Commanders are paying Von Miller to come in and be a help on the edge. But the Steelers are another one of those teams who have made moves this offseason without a lot of long term vision. With the signing of Aaron Rodgers, trading for DK Metcalf. Of course, they traded away George Pickens, but that seemed to have been a situation where it was time for both Pickens and the Steelers to go their separate ways. So, but they do get DK Metcalf in, and the Steelers, for the most part, find ways to get production, at least draft good young receivers. We'll see if there's another one in the mix to go with DK Metcalf that can be a real number two. But they bring in Jalen Ramsey, too. So while I have my questions about Aaron Rodgers, you would say that the Steelers can at least be looked at as a team that, if things go right, they are probably in that second tier with the Texans. There is the first tier of Bills, Ravens, and Chiefs. And then there is a window that or a tier that involves the Texans and the Steelers, and maybe you want to throw in who else could you throw in on that list? I think the Broncos are a step below both, and maybe the Chargers as well in that 2B tier, while the Texans and Steelers may be in the 2A tier. There's not a lot of difference, I think, and maybe the Steelers are closer to that second level of the second tier than the Texans are. But you probably got four teams who are playoff teams, and if things hit right, then maybe could be real contenders behind the top three. So TJ Watt in, and we'll see what happens with Micah Parsons. I gave you the Neil Hunter money, and we know Will Anderson's going to get his at some point, and maybe we're having discussions about Will Anderson being the highest paid non-quarterback next offseason. The Texans have gotten deals done with guys earlier than they need to. If you just go by not just how the Cowboys work, but how a lot of NFL teams work, and they've kind of made out, particularly when it comes to Nico Collins, you start to look at what Garrett Wilson is getting. But with Derek Stingley, that's the value of the best cornerback in football, and they got him on a shorter deal, at least a shorter deal than what Sauce Gardner got. So maybe we question if you're going to pay him early, you get an extra year on that. But I don't think there are going to be any problem paying Derek Stingley again, even if it is quicker than you'd like, as long as he keeps up the way he's played. So we'll go to break with that. If you want to join us, you can. Number 713-780-3776. We're here at East River 9, Michael Carroll in Hour 2. But before we get to Hour 2 or even the next segment, I want to tell you about Monument Chevrolet. Monument Chevrolet is a place you want to go to when you want a great vehicle. And this week, the vehicle of the week is the Silverado 1500. I've talked about that vehicle quite a bit. It's a great truck. It's one of their classics, and you could call Monument Chevrolet a classic as well. They've been in business for over 50 years. They celebrated their 50 year anniversary last year, so we're going into year 51. And whether you're into the Silverado and maybe it's the Blazer or the Trax, no matter what the car is, Monument Chevrolet provides you with great service. You can check out the price of those vehicles and the inventory at monumentchevrolet.com. And then once you pick the car you want, you can head on out there in Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225. And one of the deals on the website and one of the deals you can take advantage of once you get on out there is a 0% APR in 2025 on that Silverado for 36 months. So that classic 1500 is there for you, and there's a deal attached to it. And Miami Chevrolet has a large selection of new and pre-owned Silverados that you can take a look at. But how do you take a look at them? Go out to Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225. And remember this, Chevrolet, together let's drive.
It's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
So we had Keith call in the morning show, continuing his Vanderbilt agenda. And he leans on Diego Pavia as a reason why he thinks they're going to win more than anyone else thinks they're going to win. Right now, I think FanDuel has them at 4.5 wins. That's the over-under for them. He has them at 9-3 or 10-2, making the playoff. Well, we got rankings for the SEC quarterbacks. They just finished up their media days, and Arch Manning is not the best quarterback in the SEC according to this one publication, CBS Sports. They've got Grant Nussmeier. Nussmeier is someone who I've heard be put in this realm before, and he's a fine college quarterback. I don't see the best quarterback in the SEC. Maybe that just speaks to the lack of strength in the SEC at quarterback, at least in my eyes. He's fine. Yeah, he makes enough plays, but I think he's one of those guys bolstered by the level of talent that LSU puts out at the wide receiver position. That's one of those places where if you're a big time receiver, LSU should be a place you should really consider. We talked about Jamar Chase when it came to highest annual contracts for guys that aren't quarterbacks, he's second on the list. T. Higgins got his money this offseason too. Before last season. And then you've got Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. So LSU just keeps producing big-time receivers. And I think Nussmeier is more a beneficiary of that and that offensive system than it's about Nussmeier. We'll see what he is this year. So the top five, we'll go top five. It's Nussmeier, it's Arch Manning, which is purely based on reputation. And it's not even an earned reputation as far as what he's done on the field. That's, we know, it's all about the name and his status as a high school recruit. I don't know if you should be above Lenore Sellers when you have played the likes of Mississippi State and at a conference game as far as the bulk of your snaps. But he gets the two. Lenore Sellers is at three. He's one of those guys who big, strong, can run, and if South Carolina is going to be as good as everyone thinks they can be, and we know how strongly they finished last year, they were one of the teams that people thought were snubbed, one of three SEC teams that people thought could have played in the playoff. Lenore Sellers was the reason why. He was big against Clemson. He's just hard to tackle. It takes multiple shots at him, and if you don't get him down the first time, he's a big play waiting to happen. So he is three on the list. And then John Mateer, the Washington State transfer, is four. He's now at Oklahoma. Oklahoma saw Jackson Arnold transfer to Auburn as it became clear that Jackson Arnold wasn't going to be a guy that got a real chance to start. You get a quality player like John Mateer, and the writing's on the wall for Jackson Arnold. So he left. He was asked about his time at Oklahoma now that he's at Auburn. He said at least the coaching in practice, the difference was Venables was a lot more vocal than Hugh Freeze would be. He didn't really take a shot at Oklahoma. Said Auburn and Oklahoma, they practice very similarly. But the one standout difference is that Venables would be a little bit louder than Hugh Freeze is. Then Lagway at five, and then at the aforementioned Diego Pavia at six. So Lagway's another dude who's in that Lenore Sellers mold where just big, strong, a little shorter than Sellers, but got a big arm. And people think highly of Florida is going to be because of DJ Lagway. And we're going, I think we wrapped up Big 12 Media Day, SEC Media Days. The ACC has yet to have theirs. The Big Ten will have theirs. And those are from the power conferences. And, of course, around the country, the smaller conferences are having theirs as well. So we did the blue chip ratio yesterday. We'll try to do a college football segment, a little one, if there isn't a major story every day as we get closer and closer. So certainly if you are someone who has thoughts on college football as we move along throughout the summer and get into September, certainly this is a spot for you to call in. And of course, you want to call in right now at 713-780-3776. It's my, as people have listened to the show know, it's my favorite sport, and we're getting ever closer. And AJ and I, by the way, I don't know if it'll happen today, but we got a game. We got a dynasty game we got to play. AJ struggling with Stanford right now a little bit. The defense is good. Can't put points on the board though right now. I saw the score, 14-12.
Yes,
you're gonna have to come in a Snapdragon Stadium, for the San Diego State Aztec, and see if you can put up some points. So I don't know if we'll play that today. Whenever we get to it, we'll play that probably this weekend. So yeah, AJ's in our dynasty as I've talked about. The defense is stout. The offense leaves a lot to be desired for the Stanford Cardinals. So. It's me, Joe is a part of it, Sean is a part of it. We got a couple, and Brian BMAC, who you'll hear later in the afternoon, is a part of it. And of course, Josh, who's part of our dynasty as well. AJ's the one with two losses, the only one with two losses so far. So he needs a big performance against me. So we'll see how that plays out over the weekend. So that's what I'm looking forward to. The CFB dynasty and just college football as a whole. And with that, we'll go to break. That wraps up hour one with us. We're out here at East River 9, where I got a great view of downtown, and you can have that view as well if you want to come out here and play golf, or maybe you just want to play pickleball. They have I think they have six courts available that you can play it on. Also, they have the driving range, the putting green. They have all of that here, and you can get a quick nine in here at East River 9. Great place, great views, and the weather's not bad. Walk outside every now and again to stretch my legs, and that's the weather for Houston is mild. So if you want to come out here and get on the links, at least get on the course you can. And we're here for the British Open or the Open Championship or the Open, whatever you want to call it. We're here anytime there's a major championship, we come out here and enjoy our time at East River 9. You can do that too. All right, we'll get to hour two when we come back.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.